Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Hi, it's Dr. Fred back again. And so far, I haven't heard from our co-host, Sam. I imagine he's sleeping in, which sometimes happens, and I can excuse that. So the object now is for me to carry the day a little bit. And I think what we were talking about is this notion that healing requires conversation and requires some form of connection, human connection, and it has to be aligned human connection in order to be true healing. So much what I do now is what I is what True Voice is about and what Welcome to Humanity is about, which is really aligning people's views and their voices to how they really are in their soul and their heart and their gut, like really getting them aligned with their truest natural core selves. So that's what takes some energy. And that's the work that I've done my whole life, is helping people really align with their core self and bring that part of themselves forward. With that happening, we get an opportunity to have people truly heal in our midst. And another thing that happens is that when we are aligned with ourselves, we don't have to deal with all the backwash of the misalignment, where we already know that it's inappropriate to try to be someone different than we are in order to protect the person that we are, in order to protect the person that we really are. We all really understand that, but we still do it anyways. And sometimes we actually don't say things that we know we need to say, or we sometimes even say things that even we don't believe. And those kinds of things are completely out of alignment and are misaligned and incongruent with our core selves. When we start living life that way, we can't really resonate with anyone because we're no longer living a pure life. And like a tuning fork, we'll find no other tuning forks that can resonate with us. And it's actually become somewhat lonely. But in order to collaborate and in order to create a healing dyad, what we have to do is really just harmonize with the field around us. And the way we do that is to come true with our basic needs and our basic self in such a way as to draw us forward and to have us be aligned with the people that we have contact with. From there, healing naturally occurs. And healing doesn't have to be in response to being very sick. It actually can be just in a day-to-day basis, because we take trauma and toxicity in every single day, and being healed every day towards a natural state of healthiness is something that we all have to do. And our vital force or our inner selves often carry the load for that, but it's the intricacies, it's in the true imbalances that might be at a micro level or at a medium level for which healing can occur by being with another person who resonates with you. So that's what I've been doing with Healing a Healer and Find Your True Voice, and what I intend to do with being a podcast host and on this show, as well as being a podcast host on The Healthy Healer and being a podcast guest on many shows. My goal is to continue to work in that direction and to continue to be the healer that I came here to be. Clearly, when I was dropped off in this planet during this go around, I was meant to be a healer. I was dropped into a family that was in a fair amount of chaos and disarray. And what was called on for me was to bring a level of joy and a level of comfort and healing to that family. And I did so as any small little bundle of joy could. I brought a level of hope and a level of freshness to that family. And I did so for the first couple years of my life anyways. And after that, I guess it became arguable, at least from my brother's standpoint, about whether or not I was still living up to the task. I brought joy and communication to my family. And communication became the thing that I was most enchanted with in my early days and up until these very days. I really love communicating through words and through other non-vocal means, as well as through creativity. And I've always made it my business to be strong in that area. There is never a time that I wasn't a talker, and there's no elementary school student or teacher who doesn't remember having Fred as one of their students. Now, the truth is most of those elementary school student teachers aren't around anymore, but while they were around, they would not have forgotten having Fred as a student. And I really learned how to communicate more in the streets than in school once I realized that school was not the place to learn how to communicate. It may have been marketed as such, but ultimately what school was an opportunity to regurgitate a repeat of whatever the professor was teaching us. And if we could do it, the closer we could do it to being exactly as regurgitated, like exactly as stated initially, the higher the grade would be that we would get, and then we can move higher on or faster into the higher levels of school. Unfortunately, that isn't communication at all. That's repetition, and that's actually just mimicking or mocking another person rather than thinking for ourselves. So most of the thinking for myself that I did was outside of school, and I did so in the community or in the streets or in the neighborhoods. And I did my best to get around everywhere I could while I was growing up in suburban Detroit. I hitchhiked many places. I took my bike miles away. I often did long walking trips, and I would find myself in neighborhoods that I had never heard of before, never seen before, simply so I could learn how to communicate and how the world turned. This turned out well for me and has been a habit of mine for most of my young adult and early adult years as well. So I would often do a lot of traveling just to find out how the world turned. Now, once I became ultimately very nomadic and learning how the world turns, I then eventually got to the point, especially with this most recent lockdown, of getting more secure in one spot. I feel like I've traveled so much in my life that I don't have the need to travel very much more. Although I do see Facebook pages and LinkedIn pages of people who are traveling all over the world, and it does wet my whistle to see that, it's no longer an obsession that I get around to other areas. And in fact, it's become sort of an obsession for me to make something of myself standing still or being right here in Northern California. How do I heal? One of the best ways I heal is by resonating with my healers. So I have an acupuncturist, I have a colon therapist, I have a constellation expert, and now I have a cardiologist as well as a cardiothoracic surgeon who are monitoring me. And it's important for me to get harmonizing with all of them in order to make the strides forward in my healing process. As many of you might know, and some of you probably don't, I have had a recent fairly cataclysmic medical event occur approximately 7.5 weeks ago, where my aorta split down the middle in what's called a ruptured aorta or aortic aneurysm dissection. And it split from the root of the heart all the way down to the renal artery. At least that's what the surgical report says. I was a product of an incredible procedure set of procedures, a cascade of procedures that the medical industrial complex was able to put in place on my behalf, with the ambulance arriving on time, taking me to a local hospital where they found out that I was too big of a case, too big of a fish to be dealt with at their hospital. So they had to call around to Sacramento, 50 miles away, and eventually find a hospital that was strong enough to deal with a dissected aortic aneurysm, which is a very big deal. It's a deal enough so that 40% of people who have this condition actually die on that day. And somehow I not only didn't die, but I came out even better on the other side. I feel physically like I'm strong at this point, cognitively like I'm sound. And my body, including my lower body and my legs and my abdomen, are working well without any notable residual negative effects. I feel extremely fortunate for all this, and like I've been put back in life for some reason. And now it's up to me to find that reason. And I believe the reason is, exactly as I said earlier, is to help healers heal and to help people find their true voice and to bring it naturally forward into a world that it couldn't need it more. The idea is I'm a very big detective about people who aren't speaking their true voice only by noticing the discord between their soul and what they're saying, or their soul and what they're expressing. And because of that, I can work and have the musicality and the skill set as well as the gift set to help people resonate and harmonize with themselves so that they are speaking their real truth in the world. Most people don't even know that they're not speaking the real truth, and they just come accustomed to themselves being out of tune. So being out of tune is something that a piano that's out of tune won't even know that it's out of tune because it won't know which keys it's missing. It's an outside job in some ways to be able to help someone see when they are out of tune and then to offer them the tools that are necessary and the practices and the observations necessary to get them to actually come to grips with what's important to them and then make a difference in the world in areas that really matter by expressing their true self in ways that up until recently, perhaps they had not been doing. It's very important to actually be able to express yourself in that way, and all of us can do it. It turns out that when we were kids, we were already doing it, and all that's happened over time is that that has become twisted or maligned, and the crack in the cement just got larger and larger, and we never went back to repair it. The opportunity now is to go back and actually repair it, and that's what I'm hoping I'm able to do with others at this point. That's the kind of work I'm doing in my coaching practice, and that's the kind of work I'm doing in my mastermind, as well as the kind of conversations that I'm having with my podcast guests and my podcast hosts that I'm when I'm a guest. Another thing I want to speak to is who are some of my teachers? And believe it or not, some of my teachers are not human. I have three teachers in this home named Desposito, Valentino, and Winston, who are cats. And these cats show me a whole lot about how to be only temporarily self-conscious, because they do get self-conscious when they make a mistake or when they otherwise might embarrass themselves if they fall or if they miss a beat somehow. And then they are able to recover so quickly, way quicker than any human ever does. And they also tend not to be self-conscious, like they don't really care about how they walk or what they do or what they say or what they're seen doing in many levels. In the areas that don't matter, they are simply carefree, and it's beautiful to watch. They also know how to use their time so wisely by sleeping on some of the most comfortable edges of the furniture that I've ever seen, where they find sweatshirts or couch corners or box tops or cool areas or areas where there's a sunstream, where they can comfortably lay themselves down and get some shut eye. And if you've ever seen a cat sleep, and most of us have, I don't think there's ever been a time in my life where I'm as comfortable as the least comfortable my cat ever gets when they're trying to sleep. They just are able to spread out and move their body in such a way that sleep looks so delectable. I wish I could sleep like them, but I sure learned that napping during the day has nothing inherently wrong with it, and it's probably a good idea by being with my cats. My wife and I like to say that our cats are homeschooling us during the week, and that's actually true. They teach us how to be better humans, and they always remind us that smiling is a possibility, as is playing, as is sleeping, as is doing kind of silly things, and also taking care of ourselves. And no one does that better than a cat. I just love my cats, and I'm really in love with cats in general. I like to consider myself a cat dad or a feline master. And so I invite you to actually get that, that cats and your pets can really teach you a lot about who you are and how to move through the world with grace and ease. There's another teacher I have, and that is my wife. My wife is helping me actually learn about what my core values are and how I can bring them forth in such a way as to create a powerful relationship between the two of us. It seems like I have natural barriers that have been put there in my upbringing as an American white human being coming from the suburbs of a major city, and also as a third son to two older brothers, as well as a family that was in a fair amount of chaos and disarray at times. I've had my own core traumas at times and not always sure how to grow up and be able to show my love or be able to display my love affectionately inside of my relationship, though that is a goal at this point and something that we're working towards. It seems like my heart condition or my aortic dissection and its repair have had some positive effect on this overall, though time will tell. I still feel hesitant to smile for any reason or show affection for no reason. But this is something that I'm working on, something that I'm paying attention to. And I invite all the people who are listening to this, perhaps especially the men, to consider how they can upgrade their own loving capacity, because ultimately there is nothing more powerful than love. And being in love with your partner is an opportunity to set that forth if it's even still available for you to have a partner, and if so, then be in love with them. I invite you to explore the possibility. Sam, good to see you, bro.
My man, Fred Moss.
Yeah,
what's going on, man?
This is the second time that I'm coming forth in the same evening.
This is the second time you're coming forth in a single hour. Well, that's, welcome forth.
That's coming.
I completely lost track of time today. I mean, these days are getting so much longer suddenly. I was like, wait a minute, it's 6:30 right now?
I know.
Hey, your skull is looking fantastic these days.
Yeah, someone else, a couple people have told me that today. I don't know how I got that done. I can barely, my left arm still has a limited range of motion, so I can't really, I can get across to almost everywhere on my head to shave it, which I did. But I can't get to the back left, the back right. So I had to do that part right-handed.
It's a real supremo job, man. I think it looks great on you. Maybe I'm a little bit biased myself. But it looks good, man. Looks slick. I'm liking it.
Yeah, there's a number of people who have told me that I look good today. So I appreciate what you're saying. I did my webinar earlier today, and then I did my, mastermind, which I do every other Tuesday as well. In both directions, there was some adulation about somehow the way I look is good. And my wife told me I look good today, too. So,
yeah, all right, man. Yeah.
So nothing wrong with looking good. Nothing wrong with looking
good. Nothing wrong with looking good. No, it's looking good is underrated. Actually, it's probably overrated and underrated.
Yeah.
But depending on who you are. So what's going on, man? Any insights, any wisdom coming through from this week? Any thoughts about the nature of reality, human beings, our place?
One thing that's going on that maybe I made it a little clearer in the first half that we did earlier here before you woke up, which was I'm building my future around being a podcast guest. Maybe I've told you that, but that's really what's happening is I'm really – I see that the playground that's best for me is by being interviewed, having conversations with collaborators or JV partners or what colleagues who are curious about me and who I can be curious about as well, like having bona fide premium conversations with people who know how to have that. It has been and always has been what I've been exploring or what I've been wanting in my life. I remember all the way back in kindergarten where I was looking for conversation. I was already enchanted with conversation so much so because I would sit in my playpen, and watch my brothers talk to my parents and knew that talking or something about talking or conversation was important to move the world and make the world turn. So I really wanted to learn how to communicate. And when I entered kindergarten, that's what I really thought was going to happen is that I'd learn how to communicate in school. And one of my sheer disappointments that I can remember early on was the idea that my kindergarten friends were not that curious or interested in communicating. Instead, they were kind of interested in throwing blocks and picking their nose and afternoon naps and that kind of stuff. And although I too was interested in all three of those things, I was also interested in learning how to communicate. And you know, I had been given a precocious early childhood because of my brother. So I knew how to read a little bit in kindergarten, and I knew how to write a little bit in kindergarten. I knew how to do math a little bit in kindergarten. That was so far ahead any of my kindergarten peers. But what I really wanted to do was learn how to communicate. And as I went through school, that's what I naturally was exploring. But as I got to the upperclassmen, I was like, you know, maybe the sixth graders know how to communicate. And so even when I was in first grade, because I was already a good reader, they put me in the sixth grade reading class. And all I learned is that those kids didn't want to communicate either. Like, all they wanted to do was just screw around. And, you know, there wasn't anything about the essence or the beauty, the sacredness of communication that was being extolled by those kids. And I really knew there was something really special in the world of communication, but it didn't happen. On going through sixth grade, I became more and more disappointed and just decided that, you know, at least during when I'm with kids, communication might not be where I spend my time. Instead, act kind of like a doofus and, you know, play hopscotch and tetherball and, you know, and like basketball or four square or all that shit, and learn how to do those things, but not necessarily learn how to be a conversationalist or someone who knew how to communicate. In junior high, it got way worse. You know, by the time I got to kids in junior high, they had the least interest in communicating. So I figured it would happen in high school. But ultimately, that must be where kids learn how to communicate. But again, in high school, all I learned is that there was, you know, anti-discourse pretty much. And all we really were being asked to do is regurgitate, as with some degree of perfection, the exact words that the professor or the textbook was teaching us to say. And of course, that's the opposite of any kind of conversation or communication. I've been exploring this so deeply from my heart, for my entire life, that, you know, then I went to the University of Michigan with the whole hopes that at least the University of Michigan must have really smart people who were interested in communicating. And that wasn't the case there either. And as you know, it ended up in me dropping out of that college twice. And then getting on a bus both times and coming out here to Berkeley, and, you know, the South route one time and the North route another time, to just like find myself and learn how to communicate, which I did take some strides during those two summers. But the truth was, that was an unsustainable lifestyle. At least my parents convinced me of that, and I needed to come back and do something sustainable. So that's when I began to communicate for a living at the child care place, you know, the state hospital. And what I'm getting now is I've never been closer to having an opportunity. You know, we'll fast forward another 45 years through my medical career and through my, you know, the reason I went into mental health was strictly for communications purposes, because I hated what psychiatrists were doing otherwise, but I thought I could communicate as a psychiatrist. And now what I see is, through podcasting, there still is an opportunity, a really rich opportunity, for me to communicate effectively with others and bask in the glory of what it's like to actually have useful conversations, not only from speaking like I'm doing now, but in sound bites, and actually, you know, explore how other people think and what they're up to and what their values are, and have beautiful conversations with people. And on top of that, create like calls to action inside of my business, which of course is also built on communication. That's what True Voice is ultimately, of course. That's what Welcome to Humanity is. And that's what this Creative Aid is. That's what Healing the Healer is. That's what all of these things are. And just getting that, I get to swim in that. And now this time really take another maybe giant step into committing all of my life to effective communication. So that's what's happening in the world for me.
Okay. So just a real, not much at all, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, no, pretty
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's dig into that a little bit. There's so many directions we could take this. When you're speaking of communication, I assume that you are speaking of something beyond the verbal spewage of words that come through in thoughts, something beyond small talk. First of all, is there any utility to small talk? What's your philosophy.
Although
of small talk.
it tends to nauseate me as a concept, and I suppose I'm somewhat capable of participating in it. I've always had a spite for it. I used to, when I did at parties and shit, when people would, I'd pull up to a group and they'd be talking small talk, I just would be like, I would reject it with some degree of violence. So I was always interested in having deeper talk if I was given the opportunity. I always wondered why people, when they're put together, don't spend time digging into the things that really matter about being human. And they'd rather just talk about stupid shit, like, batting averages and the like, the weather report or something like that. But I guess it takes up time, it somehow is a filler between wherever we were and wherever we think we're going. So it has value for that. But I don't have very much high respect for it, although I'm clearly capable of managing it here and there. How about you?
Well, I battle with the same thing myself. I mean, if I have a feeling that a social engagement that I'm going to go to is going to include a lot of small talk, even if it's around people that I respect and have a healthy dynamic with, sometimes I will resist going simply because I don't want to get in another goddamn conversation about, what I do or what's going on in the world or whatever from a sort of a superficial standpoint, because I feel it doesn't feel always connected to me in any kind of real way. And yet there's this kind of void left behind in the absence of small talk that is a very interesting void to explore. And I've said this many times, especially with groups that I've worked with, when there's a moment that could be perceived as awkward silence. And I frequently say, there's no such thing as awkward silence. There is only awkward people. And people have an awkward feeling around silence when everything stops and nothing new has emerged yet. There's a feeling like, it's like, getting the dial tone and not knowing where to move from that place. And I really encourage people to learn how to develop a comfort around what they might otherwise call awkward silence, because it's in those moments that there's actually a potency in that void of communication. If you follow the thread of that void, if you really let go of any kind of agenda to move the conversation anywhere, or a need or an impulsive response to come in and facilitate something and get out of the awkward silence, if you instead just allow for the awkward silence or the feeling of awkwardness amidst the otherwise neutral silence, there is frequently something interesting that is an opportunity for to connect to something. But I sense that because we're so accustomed to speaking and talking, not necessarily communicating, but speaking and talking, and when we're not doing that, we're so accustomed to listening to the voices in our head that when there's something that we would feel like is silence, people are rushed to fill that gap frequently. And if you don't rush to fill that gap, then maybe, oh, is this person really introverted? Or are they just trying to be distant from me? Do they not like me? There are all these sort of social projections that get projected onto the moment from other people based on if you're just being quiet. And so anyway, that's a long, rambling, long-winded response to your inquiry. But I do feel like there are, there's certainly nothing wrong with small talk per se. It just can get, like you said, a little nauseating or a little irritating, because it feels to me as though the communication of small talk feels like a compensation for a deeper existential truth that is missing in that moment that is not being communicated.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. I couldn't say that better. I think the idea here is like when given the gift of an opportunity to actually communicate, why not actually go in and do it? You know, what there's stuff that we could really explore that is kind of interesting or that could move the needle forward or make life more fascinating or somehow be a discourse that is rewarding and harmonically resonating
Right.
instead of spending our time just filling it with superficial bullshit.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're gifted with this full buffet of options, of directions of conversation that we could potentially go. And we tend to go to the least nourishing and most sort of filling and satisfying craving that isn't actually creating any sort of nourishment for the body or for the mind, but it is rather just, you know, like the salts and sugars of the things on the buffet table. And my feeling about that is that there is a lot of unconscious discomfort in the collective consciousness that we would prefer to avoid. And that most of what we call communication is actually an avoidance tactic. It's actually, you know, how much can I avoid my truth or avoid truth, not maybe necessarily even my truth, but avoid the truth? How can much can I avoid reality and the existential challenge that comes with being a human being by using pre-formatted, socially acceptable forms of communication to fill in the space? And this doesn't necessarily apply to just small talk too. I'm around, and I know you are also around, quite a few very intelligent people who are doing the same fucking thing, but at a more sophisticated level, using more intelligent communication. They might be talking about a subject at great depth because that then allows them to feel a sort of a fluency in certain subjects, but it has no more substance necessarily to it than the small talk. It actually, in many respects, the small talk is a little bit more honest than
Interesting.
someone who has an intellectual prowess in these different areas, but is using that intellectual prowess to sort of, you know, flaunt their ego or whatever.
Really interesting. It's very, very interesting. You know, and I wonder, as you're saying that, I'm wondering if, as we spend our time here pretending, or at least, declaring out loud that maybe we're exploring a real issue here, something worth spending time exploring. It's possible that an outsider would look at this and think that that's what we're doing. Is
No, I'm
that?
definitely doing that. I know that I'm doing
Yeah.
that.
True. It's true. It's like it's what we're doing. It's like we're over intellectualizing our small talk
That's right.
as a way of having
Exactly.
it appear that we might not actually be having small talk. We might actually
Yeah,
be.
that's right. That's right. And we're inflating our own egos as superior to those who engage in small talk through our
Yeah.
own more philosophical small talk. Yeah, I
Exactly.
mean, it's kind of like you know, it's sort of a catch-22,
Yeah.
but it's worth pointing at as a thing, as a phenomena.
It seems like it from some vantage point. It seems like when you say it's worth pointing at it, you're coming from a place that apparently isn't a small talk producing place. Like that's a place that actually determines whether something is significant enough to pay attention to. So
Yeah.
if it's worth paying attention to this as a phenomena, that somehow delivers some version of, even though I'm small talking, I'm doing so for a greater good. Like somehow self making the thing self righteous, you know, like we're
Yeah,
like.
or at the very least, if someone were to be listening to this and go, oh yeah, well, at least he has enough self-awareness to realize that he's doing the same thing, or, you know, oh, well, yeah, that guy hates small talk too. You know, at least that might be serving some kind of a function in terms
Maybe.
of You know, communication is really at the end of the day, I think communication is a tool. It's not really, I suppose it's a fundamental to who we are. We're always communicating something energetically, verbally, et cetera, but it is a tool to try to create a coherent current of energy exchange, I suppose.
Isn't that interesting, TJ? How about that? How about Sam hitting on session number one right there? Sam, you just hit you totally resonated with the whole purpose of the first half hour of the show.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, completely. There we go.
It's crazy, dude. He's right. It is crazy. What you just said is so resonating. It loops back all the way around. He's absolutely right about that to the first session. Because what I was speaking toward was in the world of communication, well, it is a tool. And in fact, it is the tool that creates the possibility of conversation, which then creates the possibility of connection, which is the essence of all healing, right? If we get to human connection is at the essence of all human healing. And no healing will take place without human connection at some level. When we get that, then we can also get that ultimately the only way to actually heal is to be resonating harmonically with ourselves, is to actually be in tune with ourselves, so our tuning fork is hitting the vibration naturally. And then in that harmonic resonance with another, that's where the healing takes place. But when we fall off our own harmonic resonance and we spend our time either talking shit or not talking when we should, or maybe actually saying things that we don't even believe, we fall so far out of vibration that even if we're standing next to somebody, we can't resonate with them because we're not a pure turning fork. You're not close enough to being a pure tuning fork to allow the resonance to take place in the other person. And it is in that resonance. So cleaning up our act, finding our truest voice, finding our honest to goodness core values and our honest to goodness core communication interests, and then exploring from there leaves open the magic of resonating with another person, which causes ultimately, which at least if it doesn't cause, it seems like it at least contributes directly to all the to a significant amount of healing.
Yeah. Now, what comes to mind as you're talking about this is the sort of the fundamental need that every human being has to feel as though they have a safe and clearly defined place in the world.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's fundamental. You know, if we go to Maslow, you know, the fundamental need of all human beings is to physiologically have a sense of safety. And that sense of safety, because we are relational beings, comes through our ability to relate and to find common ground with other people.
Exactly.
And part of what I'm thinking about when you talk about this sort of the differences between a harmonic, aligned form of communication where the tuning fork is tuned and in harmony with what is being communicated, and something other than that, is that it seems to me that what is other than that frequently comes from an unconscious sense that one is not safe and fully safe and embodied in this present moment. And as a symptom of that feeling of a lack of safety, one might talk shit, or one might try to, you know, manipulate someone to agree with them, or use some sort of a, you know, maybe it's a distortion of the skill of relating in an effort to try to establish their sense of belonging.
Right.
Versus if someone is already in a resonant field, sensing their inherent belonging and their inherent safety, then they can communicate more freely without the restriction of the notions of right or wrong or good or bad or whatever, and listen and respond in a way that it isn't emotionally charged in quite the same manner. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. And it seems like you're really pointing to this notion of when we're efforting or trying something, whatever that even really means, is a forceful, violent act. ultimately. It's a forceful, violent act to get the job done quicker than we, quicker or more effectively than we otherwise would if we just stayed solid and strong with ourselves. When we're in tune with ourselves, there is no need to effort and there's no need to try. We just simply are in tune, like a resonant, like we don't have to find the vibrations that allow for that. I would say that in this conversation with you today, we've been pretty in tune. And that, in fact, is the essence of our friendship, is that ultimately we're able to at least wipe off enough cobwebs on our own little turning forks that we tend to be complementary, if not directly harmonically resonating with each other. And truly appreciate that.
Amen. Well said. Well said, brother. Yeah.
Looks like we only have a minute and a half left, so we got to probably think about closing the shit down. So, Sam, we have millions, at least millions of viewers on it that are watching us this evening. And the lines were so packed in the first call that I chose not to take any calls. So what I really want you to do is just let people know how can they get a hold of you if the lines are, lines are just busy.
You can reach me at sam@zenwarriortraining.com.
And you can reach me at drfred@welcometohumanity.net. It's been a deep pleasure, Sam. Thanks for coming around for the second half. TJ, thanks for reopening the show. Thanks for being our go-to in the IT department. And it's really been a pleasure. Thanks for listening to everybody. And to everybody, thank you for listening. Thanks for being part of True Voice with Dr. Fred. And we'll catch you on the flip side. Bye for now. Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?